Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, here's a startling fact for you. Did you know that loneliness actually kills more people than cigarettes? Loneliness is considered a health risk equivalent to smoking a pack a day. And unfortunately, the trends are reversed. You know, with all the anti-smoking PR campaigns and new government health regulations, the incidence of smoking deaths probably is decreasing. But on the other hand, in today's marginalized society, with fewer extended families, more people are lonely and living alone. In 1950, only 9% of U.S. households were comprised of just one person. And today, 28% of adults live alone. And unfortunately, that's not the whole story. There's a lot of people living in marriages that maybe have just of convenience type thing where you're really lonely even though you're living with someone else. So our guest today, Dr. William Corder, is here to explain why people need other people, not only to survive, but merely to survive, not only to thrive, I should say. Dr. Connor served as an associate medical director of a large healthcare agency for 17 years, and he worked as a national physician consultant, shaping care for over 30,000 patients for 16 years, and he's currently founder of the Boomer Health Institute and author of a brand new book called The Boomer Survivor Kit, an indispensable guide for yourself, your relationships, and your life. And hello, Dr. Corder, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, I certainly agree with that framework, that middle age can be your best age, but it's a delight to be here and a delight to speak to you.
Yeah, well, to begin, please relay the tragic story. It's not a pleasant story, but it's a sad story of from the first chapter of your book about a friend's call late one night and the loneliness and hopelessness that he suffered from and what resulted.
Well, just two components, and one is that when I was close to reevaluating my life, I stopped one job and decided to kind of redesign my life. But in the midst of that, on a Sunday evening around 10 p.m., I got a call from really one of my best long-term friends, an individual. If you've ever had a Good Earth product, you can thank this individual for that Good Earth product because he had his areas of success. But when he called that night, I could tell he was distraught, and he had been drinking. And he called and said that he had just wanted to thank me for our friendship and to say goodbye because he was on the fifth floor of a balcony.
Wow.
Ready to jump. And, you know, I did, I think, what most of us would do. You kind of flag down your spouse. You secretly and quietly as possible start to write down the information where your wife can call 911 and hopefully get some help to your friend. But he stopped me. Knowing me, he said, Bill, you know, you can't make any attempt to call 911. If you make any attempt to talk me out of jumping from this balcony, I'm going to hang up. So will you talk? And with that situation, even as a physician and as someone who was trained in psychiatry, you know, I crumpled up the paper and simply sat back, went to the living room, sat back, and spoke to him for about an hour and a half. And he relayed the frustrations that so many baby boomers relay, and maybe people of even younger years. And that is, you know, he was moving close to age 60. His wife had died, and he was still mourning his wife. He had multiple injuries from a football career in college, and he had, you know, relationships that had gone south, money that had been earned and lost, and it was really a picture of, you know, loneliness, isolation, and despair from his part. But midway through the talk, I mean, he asked me and surprised me. He said, you know, Bill, I hear that you're redesigning your life. Tell me about it. And so I talked for 10, 15 minutes about how I felt it was important to redesign your life and how to redesign your life. And he stopped me at the end and said, you know, that's the best prescription I've ever had. And I've had a lot of prescriptions in my life. So he asked for me to make a promise. And he said, yeah. You know, it's a lifelong friend, as someone who drove me from the airport to the hospital for the birth of my first child, make me a promise that you'll write the book and get it out there for people, because I think there are a lot of people like me who need it. Yeah. And I made that promise, and I've kept that promise. I will add that I didn't sleep well that night because he immediately hung up right after I made that promise, and so I was worried that he had jumped. But the next day he called at around 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. He had checked himself into a hospital. He was treated for 3 days. But after 3 days, whether antidepressant medication, anti-anxiety medication, he said all the right things to the doctor, was discharged, went home, had a bottle of vodka, and jumped to his death.
Yeah, unfortunately, it didn't have a happy ending, but it certainly brings home the key of, now you were a lifelong friend of his, but I'm sure that, you know, he felt loneliness without his wife. His children were grown, and I don't know, he probably didn't have as much contact with them as he would have liked, but it shows how devastating it can be when you have that feeling that there's no one really there, that there's no reason to go on.
And you know, I think that's a very good point, because when you go through a situation like that, all of us, you end up rewinding the tape of the conversation and asking yourself, what could I have done differently, and what could I have offered? And, you know, at his funeral and speaking to other people, I think I found the answer to what I could and should have done. And it's something that I hope we get around to discussing today, because on that evening, it was not one of the points that I did discuss.
Yeah, the key thing in this case, it sounds to me like this gentleman, your friend, really didn't have anyone right with him that he wanted to live for. Now, if he'd had a close relationship, his wife was still surviving, it's highly unlikely, I would think, that he would have committed suicide. But when you're all wrapped up and your only person you're really living for at this point in your life is yourself on a day-to-day basis, it's very hard to maintain a positive outlook, I guess.
No, and your opening commentary was absolutely perfect. You hit all of the major trends that are, you know, red flags to be aware of and to hopefully try your best to move away from. And that is, we do have more and more people that are living by themselves. We have more and more people that claim that they don't have anyone close that they can call and talk to. We have more and more people that are growing older. I mean, 10,000 people in this country turn 65 every day and will for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And so we have a group of people that have limited mobility, more isolation, and even though, you know, we have 1.1 billion people on Facebook and half a billion people on Twitter, you know, typing a character is not the same as making a connection.
No, that's unfortunately, it's so much kind of a pseudo-friendship that people are substituting for true friendships with face-to-face interactions and things like that. But well, beyond mere survival, what are some of the proven medical benefits of sustained friendships? I know it's not just surviving, it's also a much better life if you have friendships around.
No, and I think you know, I think our survival does depend on friendship. If you look throughout the animal kingdom, and there are a number of outstanding studies, whether you look at monkeys, chimpanzees, baboons, or elephants, or dolphins, those who have friends live longer.
Yeah.
And they actually, in their experiments, they'll follow around and pick up their urine or their feces and measure them for corticosteroids.
Yeah.
And those that are stressful and harmful show up when the individual or the animal does not have a close friendship or has lost a close friendship. And that's the same for humans. I mean, those of us who have close friendships, our corticosteroids that are with stress are buffered. And a little bit safer. And those individuals who don't have a close friend, who don't have someone that they can share with, their stress hormones are much higher, much more lethal. So you may not jump from a balcony, but you're being killed from within from your own stress.
Yeah, you mentioned like it lowers your blood pressure, friendship, reduces stress hormones, improves your immune system. I mean, all those good things that...
on the studies of just horses, for one horse grooming another, they each lower their heart rate. So that sort of connection is beneficial for a whole host of animals, and it certainly is beneficial for us, and for us in particular, it does increase your immune system. It activates that part of that half of your immune system that really goes to work in protecting your health, repairing your physiology, and really decreasing the speed of aging.
Why do you think it is that people need a sense of connection and the joy of giving to remain healthy? I mean, can't I just enjoy myself and have a great time of it and be healthy?
The unfortunate part is I think the key to life is connection and giving. And if you're by yourself, I mean, who do you have to mentor? Who do you have to kind of nurture? Who do you have to support and give to? And without those elements, you know, even if you're healthy and in decent physical shape and feel good about yourself, you're still missing out on a key part of life.
No, that's
and I
very
think it's
true.
That
even if you're wealthy, you can't just keep buying yourself presents and benefits.
No, and there are, I mean, that issue is disputed. A lot of people believe you can buy happiness with wealth, but there's a lot of good studies that show that it is a bell-shaped curve, and you don't have to read the studies. You can just look at the tabloids. A lot of individuals with wealth are right there in rehab or right there in psychiatric facilities.
And, you know, you
facilities.
Can give a lot to charities, but that's really not the same as looking a person face-to-face and giving of yourself. I mean, not that you shouldn't give to charities, but
you hit an excellent point. I mean, another excellent point, and that is the recommendation for those individuals who do have some money is not to go that route. Writing a check is not the same as making a contact, just the same as, you know, putting a post on Facebook is not the same as putting your arm around someone or giving a firm handshake or pat on the back. Those are the type of human connections that we really need despite the technology of our world.
Well, our program's current theme is midlife recovery, and let's say that you're middle-aged and lonely. What are some relatively easy but proven ways to combat loneliness and to connect with others? I mean, say I'm kind of shy, and how do I go about meeting other people and connecting with them if I'm sort of isolated or feel isolated?
Well, here's the route that I have taken with a number of patients over the years and helping problematic patients who have not been getting better and I've consulted on. One of the questions you ask is, you know, when did you last help somebody?
Yeah.
And with a lot of shy people especially, it's going to be an answer you don't really want to hear because they haven't. And so what you try to encourage is the process of going out in the world. Maybe it's just to the supermarket. Maybe it's just to run an errand. But you go out with the idea of giving a gift to somebody.
Huh.
Nothing material, but it's a smile, a compliment, you know, again, a helping hand. Because that helps you change your own assessment of who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And all of us want to feel good about who we are. And I don't think many of us feel good about who we are unless we're having pretty frequent acts of giving and sharing.
Yeah, you know, when I go out for walks most every day, and on some days I'm in a bad mood and I just sort of look away from people and don't acknowledge them and don't initiate contact. And other days I do and smile and always get a smile back. And what a world of difference it makes in terms of how I feel about just, you know, those casual interactions.
Well, you know, it does a couple things. If you can focus on, okay, I'm going to make contact on my walk and I'm going to share and make someone smile, it changes the focus from yourself to others. And there's a huge advantage in doing that because if you are lonely, it takes you a little bit away from your loneliness. And if you can make a contact and make a comment and get that smile, it lifts not only their mood, it lifts your mood just as much.
Yeah, what's the best way to convert a casual acquaintance, say a person that you've recently met and you're really attracted to, into a close friend without, you know, looking like you're coming on too strong? Or I guess there again, it's paying attention to what you can do for that other person would be the primary way. But
yes, I do think paying attention to what you can do for the other person is probably the key component, and you've hit a lot of key components. So I'm impressed by your wealth of of knowledge and the depth of your recommendations, because I think if you can pay attention to their needs and meet their needs, then you have a chance of spending more time with the individual. And I'm a great believer that the golden moments of life are related to the amount of time you spend with somebody. The more time you spend with somebody, the more golden moments. The statistics in our nation are pretty, disturbing when you look at the time a husband spends with the wife. Today it's about, 10, 20 minutes per day.
Yeah,
and,
not enough.
You know, father spends with the child 5 to 20 minutes per day, one-on-one. So they're not creating enough time to have enough of those golden moments that cement a friendship and can keep a friendship going where it can expand, and then you have more time with the individual.
Well, what if I'm middle-aged and I recently am widowed or divorced and I'm used to living as a married person with a close one-on-one relationship and I miss my former spouse very much, maybe even if it's a divorce, we used to be very close. And what's your advice to me? Should I seek out a new romantic relationship right away? Or I guess it all depends on the individual. Or maybe
it depends on the individual, but I do have some recommendations, and that is I do think each individual has to go through the grieving process.
Yeah.
And for some individuals, it will take longer than others.
Yeah.
In fact, some of the closest relationships and the best relationships actually have the shorter grief period. The relationships that were conflicted and difficulty may have a longer grief period, but I would recommend, allowing yourself to grieve. But once you do, then to get out and refocus on others and get out into the world.
Yeah,
and there are
the
so
danger
many
is grieving too long and grieving permanently.
Yes,
that doesn't make any sense.
A lot of people do that, and then a lot of people get into a situation where they love their home, they're living alone in their home, they don't want to leave their home, so what do they do? And I think for those individuals, taking in somebody to live with is an option.
Yeah.
There are more and more people who are living alone. You might as well invite one of those to see if you can get someone to live with you and have some companionship.
Yeah, they might even share the cost.
That too, but for individuals or for not sharing the cost, don't overlook the value of having a pet.
No, I shouldn't have even mentioned that. That's not the key to this program. But is there any truth to the common perception that men are more independent and that we men can survive and thrive better without close personal relationships than the females can?
Well, here's my perspective. I think the females are better at making connections between
they
themselves.
Are, my wife
and men
certainly
are not.
Is better than me.
And so, from an appearance standpoint, man, look, independent, out on his own, but we just don't make the connections as well as the females. But we, male or female, we all need them.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the recommendations I have for baby boomers as you get old is to go back at your life and look at the friendships that have been lost and see if any of those can be rekindled.
Yeah, that's a suggestion I make in my book, and I've made all along that, you obviously can't replace the person you've lost, but you can find other relationships that have a lot of the same benefits that you obtained from that person, and you can give a lot of the same things you gave to that lost loved one to someone else and develop new relationships that can.
And you honor the person by doing that.
Yes,
I once listened to Lou Holtz when he was the coach of the Notre Dame football team, and he was sharing that when he was in college, his parents divorced very abruptly, and his mother was distraught, so he wanted to go home and offer support, but he was broke. He had no money, so he tried to hitchhike, and I think it was across Ohio, and he tried to hitchhike home and was caught in a snowstorm, and it was past midnight, and he was stuck in the foot of snow standing on the turnpike, absolutely freezing to death, and an old couple came by. And they were just getting off at two exits ahead, but he told his story. They drove an extra hour and a half and dropped him off at his front door. And he felt so bad. He said, "I wish I could repay you. I mean, you've made such a sacrifice." And they said, "You can. Every time you help somebody, think of us."
Yeah,
and that will
exactly
be payment
right.
in itself.
Actually, he, not knowing it, he had repaid them, because I'm sure it made them feel so good that they did that, that they got a lot of benefit out of it as well as he did. But Good old Coach Lou.
Yep, good old Coach Lou. But if you lose a spouse, I think you can honor that spouse by doing those sorts of acts of assistance to others and sharing the love you felt for your spouse with others.
And basically mentally dedicating those acts of service to that lost loved one.
Yes, and I think that keeps that person alive in your heart. And I think that's a wonderful way to keep the love that you had still alive.
Well, I'm very intrigued by your recently formed Boomer Health Institute and your brand new book, The Boomer Survivor Kit, because your goals and objectives are very similar to the goals of this program and the book I wrote. And tell us a little about your book and how you cover these 9 steps for redesigning yourself, because I hate the thought that your best days are behind you once you reach 40 or 50 or whatever, and that there's nothing really left except going downhill.
Well, I'll tell you as a starting point, in listening to you, I have a feeling you already know all of the material that I probably will present. But as a physician, I do have 9 steps, and the first step is, of course, your physical health.
Yeah.
I do believe that as we get older, you have to have the vitality to confront all of these challenges. And if you're going to manufacture and create that vitality, you really have to, you know, regain your physical health. And I think today most of our illnesses are food-borne illnesses. You know, our food is killing us. What we eat is killing us. And so I have a series of recommendations of changing the way you eat and what you eat. And then I have a series of recommendations in terms of changing your physical exercise so that you can get more walking and more activity and get your body more flexible and mobile. And then I have directions in terms of even changing your mental focus, so you're looking at what you want in your life as opposed to what you don't want.
Yeah, and there are ways to constantly grow mentally, whatever your age, and so many people don't realize that. But
no, there are. I think personal development and growth can occur at any age, whether you're in your teenage years or you're in your 60s. And so I'm a great believer in upgrading your physical health, upgrading your mental focus, and then changing the direction of your life. And in that part, I think too many people are trapped on the focus of money and career and the conveyor belt of your career. And I think more people need to get off that conveyor belt and look at what's meaningful in their life.
Yes, and so many people relate their worth to their career, and then once they retire, they feel like they're worthless. And of course, the society this day is so good at shunning the old people away and say they're no longer relevant and they're just in the way. And which is utterly, it's so different from how ancient societies used to honor the elderly, and it's really a crying shame. But that's why I hate when they talk about seniors and all that kind of stuff. Senior moments.
You're right on target. I can remember when I was in college. I mean, it's gotten worse over the years, but it's always been a problem. And I think in this country, we don't have the respect for the older individuals or our elders as they do in other colleges.
One reason the country's in so much trouble. We'd rather listen to what some celebrity says, a young, handsome celebrity or beautiful celebrity says on Twitter or Facebook, rather than listening to the knowledge of somebody that's been there and done that. Like when we turned to Justin Bieber at age 19 for our philosophy. Not to knock poor Justin. I don't even know anything about him, but I just...
No, and the opposite extreme is I can remember being in a bus leaving Kennedy Airport in New York City in the snow, and at the bus pulling away, and an old lady coming running after the bus, dragging her suitcase, and the bus driver stopping the bus, thank God, but only barely opening the door so he could not let her in so he could talk to her. And she got up and she said, please, please, please let me in. And he said, lady, if you're in a hurry, take a taxi.
Yeah, only in New York.
Only in New York and only at that age.
Young
female with a bit of skirt and a bit of skin showing, that door would have opened in a flash.
Well, how anyone would have so little concern for any kind of a human being, young, old, or whatever age that they would do that is completely beyond me. But I guess only in New York they get hardened to that kind of thing.
Me too. But
I would never want to ride on that bus with that bus driver. Let me tell you.
No, nor would I. But I think one of the challenges you hit at is that, you know, we do have a responsibility as our generation, of baby boomers, those born between 46 and 64. I mean, we've had our 60s and we've had an imprint on the world. I think we could have an imprint on the world today if we took a hold of aging and really showed some leadership in this world.
That's exactly right. Why shouldn't we still have an influence? We have a lot of number of us, and there's no reason why we have to turn it over to somebody else at this point. That doesn't mean we have to stand in anybody's way, but there's no reason that we shouldn't share our knowledge. And after all, we went through the 60s and all those riots and in Chicago at the Democratic Convention and all that anti-war stuff, and we've been there and done that.
Well, we've gone from our younger years of anti-war. Maybe we can anti-aging.
That's a good
maybe
idea.
Not physically, but get them to appreciate the value of age and the value of wisdom. And I think wisdom does come with years. It doesn't come just through books.
How can listeners best obtain your brand? I think it just was released, a month ago or so? So it's a brand new, hot off the press.
Yeah, it's just released a week ago. In fact, it will be available on Kindle sometime later today. It was up on Amazon. It's in bookstores, but just will be on Kindle. And I'm a great believer that, you got to walk your talk. And I'm preaching moving away from money and moving away to things that are meaningful. So on Kindle, the book's $5.99. The editor was not very happy with my selection of pricing, but I'd rather have a lot of people read it and do well than have a few people read it. So my goal is to get the message out.
And you also, that's on Amazon, and you can also, I guess, go to your website, and you also have some upcoming teleseminars. Tell us a little about what those are going to be.
Yes, those teleseminars will reflect the program that I have in the book, and that is I'm going to walk through an eight weekly sessions. I'm going to walk the listeners through how to redesign your life, starting from the physical all the way ending up on the spiritual, and see if I can't help others kind of redesign and reboot themselves, much like I feel like I've been able to do with myself in the last year.
Boy, that sounds fascinating. And there again, your website is boomerhealthinstitute.com. Isn't that correct?
Yes, it is. It has a blog that's every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And so there's a lot of information there, and we're hoping to help others.
I believe you can preview your first seven chapters of your book on there.
Yes, we'll give you seven free chapters of the book. In fact, I mean, you can go to Amazon, and I asked for them to have it open to the public, so it's not 100%. They don't allow me to do that, but you can get to a lot of pages on loneliness and take a look at the little
bits and pieces. Yeah, I just reviewed that on Amazon today, and I was very impressed, and I would highly recommend that. Like I said, I'd recommend Dr. Corder's book and his website, and that's the Boomer Survivor Kit. And why don't you read that along with my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, because really we have both the same purposes. He goes about it quite differently than has a lot of extensive information on healthy diet and mind exercises and the kind of exercise that you need, and it really ties in with what we talk about, the OPENS formula, an optimistic outlook, sleep, physical activity, and all those go together. And you're not going to get too far in renewal if you're in a really lagging physically and not taking care of that aspect of your life.
Well, I tell you, when we finish our interview, I'm going to go buy your book, because it sounds to me like you have a lot of great material yourself. So I bet you can educate me as much, if not more, than I can educate you.
Well, I don't think so. But
well, I do.
let's go to both the websites. And his website, boomerhealthinstitute.com, and mine, middleagerenewal.com. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Corder. I wish we had hours and hours to talk, because this is such a huge subject of how the people, not just baby boomers, but younger middle-aged people that are turning in their 40s and, maybe were born after 1964 or the last year of the boomers, also can realize that life is not going downhill when they reach 40 or whatever.
Yes. Well, I tell you, it's been a pleasure for me and educational for me. So let's hope they do just that, get both of our books and totally change their life from stress and chaos and loneliness into something that's far, far better.
And best of success in your new book that's just coming, hitting the market these days.
Well,
thank you.
Good
so
luck
much
to
for
you
joining.
Too, and you have a new fan in me right now.
Thank you very much. Well,
okay, thank you, and I enjoyed it. Bye-bye.
Well, to close our program today, I want to wrap up our series of programs on recovery from the traumatic challenges common to middle age. And I want to conclude with a suggestion. Take reasoned and intentional steps to recover, get over, grieve, and recover, and move on with your life forward, but take your time. That's my primary message. Take your time. You know, an article in the July 30th, 2013 Wall Street Journal quoted experts who say most people should give themselves a full 2 years to recover from midlife emotional trauma. And if it's the death of a loved one, say a spouse or a child living at home, it may take even longer. It also may take longer if you were blindsided, according to these experts. If your spouse left abruptly without warning, you had no idea he or she was having an affair, or that he or she had grown tired of you and didn't want to be married anymore. If you're fired unexpectedly, you walk in one Monday morning and things seem great, and you suddenly find that your division is closing or that you've been downsized out of work, or obviously a tragedy like a loved one dying in an accident or a sudden heart attack when you had no idea that you would soon lose that person. You know, if you had advanced warning, you may have given some thought and planning to the next stage of your life, but that's pretty difficult to do when you're all stressed out and worried about what might happen, so that may not put you that far ahead of the game anyway. Heck, you may have been the person that filed for divorce, or you may have been so stressed out you quit that job on your own and you hated the job anyway. But even if expected and even if pre-planned, the experts say recovery often takes longer than most people expect. You know, once you get over the shock, it's going to be a long process. And this is right in line with comments of recent guests we've had on the subject of recovery. The best path to recovery, according to these guests, as you may recall, is to recognize what you're up against and then strive to overcome the difficulty rather than living in a la-la land and assuming that your pain and unease and regret will magically go away, because it won't. Here's a formula that we can suggest. The first step, relax and recognize that full recovery will take time. Now, it's obviously different time periods for different folks, but as these experts say, it could take you up to 2 years to get over whatever you're trying to get over. And don't feel pressured to make yourself feel okay or beat yourself over the head if you're not okay in 6 months or whatever, because you're not okay and it'll take time to recover. And make it known to close friends, loved ones, and business associates that you're working on recovery, but it will take your time, and ask for their help and understanding. And fourth, as soon as you can, begin working on an extended and careful plan for recovery. And you're not just want to go day to day and not have any idea what you're trying to accomplish, but recognize that this plan is flexible and it can be revised, and your time can always be extended to get over the hurt if you're overly depressed, overwhelmed, and anxious. Fifth, begin imagining and visualizing the newly recovered individual you plan to become and set a realistic target date for when the process is complete. And like we said, it may be 2 years in the future. The next stage, number six, is to take small steps to recovery, but only at a pace that you can accomplish and you feel comfortable with. Never try to force the recovery. Seven, set interim recovery objectives. This is always a good thing, and some target dates, but be very flexible and routinely update your plan as events unfold and as you see how the recovery is working out. And last but not least, plan a joyous reward for yourself once recovery is complete and you're ready to move on as a confident, renewed individual. Here's a few more suggestions. And this is a very important one. Don't plan any drastic changes in your life until recovery is fairly well along, even complete, because it rarely, if ever, is effective, for instance, to move across the country to get away from a painful experience in the town where you presently live or to ease the pain, and never, never rush into an on-the-rebound serious relationship. That's probably the most dangerous thing you can do, because if you're running away from the past rather than to the person you're entering the relationship with, that's probably going to end the same way the prior one did. And I think statistics show that those on-the-rebound relationships seldom, if ever, last. And drastic moves like moving away or quitting your job or doing something like that just to get away from the past, usually they only prolong recoveries. They don't speed the recovery. And here's a wise game plan that you need to consider. You need to consider all aspects of your life that may be disrupted, and some of these may sound surprising. For instance, here's a few examples. If you're recently divorced, your friendships with couples that you and your spouse used to go out with are different, very different, and you have to ask yourself whether you want to continue in those relationships as a single person or not. With former business associates, once you've lost your job and they haven't, you know, that's a very uneasy feeling when you run into them at the club or at church or whatever. So those are some of the things you need to consider. Your relationship with your children following a divorce, whether or not you have custody, you know, how are you going to relate to your children as a divorced parent, and what are you going to say about your ex-spouse, and, you know, there's all those difficult aspects of post-divorce relationships with children. Finances can be a major issue following a divorce, obviously following loss of a job. Following a divorce, you know, you have to split it up, and your spouse may have been making more money than you have, and things may be strained for a while financially. Your residence and living conditions, you may have lost your job and have to move, or if you're divorcing, one of the spouses almost always moves out, and it's usually the man, so you have to adapt to whole new living arrangements and living conditions. And here's a surprising one. Career often is a major impact. We're talking about, obviously, if you lose your job, career is an immediate impact. But even following a divorce, career can be an issue, because you may want to take a totally different approach to your career and to your career path you're on following a divorce. You might, for instance, if you're now single, want to dedicate a lot more time and attention to moving up in your workplace and spending more time on the job. On the other hand, if you're suddenly a single parent with full custody of the children, you may be less available to work and spend long hours on the job. So that's obviously a consideration. And then there's just the daily pattern of living. You're now alone and you have no boss, or if it's, you know, you lost your job, or no spouse if you lost your spouse, and there's real considerations there of what life alone and without set responsibilities to someone else. And don't simply shoot to recover going forward. Shoot to create a joyful and productive future on your own terms. You know, it makes no sense. You can never really recover fully from what you've lost, and it makes none. You probably weren't all that happy before anyway, but even if you were, you have no real choice to go back. So why not go forward positively on your own terms? Recognize in most cases you will need a new self-identity, so it might as well be one that you're comfortable with. If you're divorced, you're no longer, quote, husband or wife, and you no longer, if you've lost your job, you're no longer manager of human resources, vice president finance, director IS, or whatever, for XYZ Corporation, and you no longer have that assigned parking space, that country club membership, that corner office, all those things you identified with. And please remember that your worth as an individual is not measured solely by the position you hold or whether you're married or single. You're starting over, but you're no less a wonderful person that God created, whether you're in those situations or not. So why not rebuild your identity to be a re-energized, positive individual that God intended you to be, what we like to call the new, improved you? You have no choice but to move forward, but do it on your own terms. Why not consider your recovery as a building process, yourself under renovation? You know, when a building is renovated, they tear out the elements that aren't attractive and that you don't want in there anymore, and they renovate and put in new elements that are more positive. And that's what you're doing following recovery from trauma. Here's some more important considerations. An essential first step, as we all know, is to get over the anger, resentment, and bitterness toward a former boss, a former spouse, or, quote, circumstances that you may be blaming for what happened to you. Because lingering over the past does absolutely no good. And we've talked about this before. Forgive, or obviously get over those hard feelings as soon as possible, and don't hold those grudges because they accomplish absolutely nothing. And here's another good thought. Use your past only as a learning tool and ask yourself, how could I have done better to make this relationship, for instance, last, or to keep my job? And how much of the responsibility was mine? You know, if the division is closing or they're downsizing the organization, you may not have that much responsibility. Then again, some people lose their job because they really weren't doing their job that well, and you need to recognize that if it was not solely your employer's fault, so that it doesn't happen again. And that's really the only purpose in looking at the past. There's a three-step process, as I like to call it, to recovery, and the steps may overlap. The first week is the narrow term, recovery from the actual trauma. Get over that period of grief or resentment or whatever it may be, the sense of loss. Second is to rebuild structure in your life, create that new self-identity going forward. And the third stage or step is to plan for and build a positive new identity for a stronger, satisfying future on your own terms. And I like to talk about an overriding formula for recovery. You accept the fact that things are the way they are, and you feel bad. This is normal, healthy, and to be expected. And there's nothing wrong with you for feeling bad. And it's okay, even positive, to experiment with new experiences and try out new things, but don't make any major irreversible changes until you're firmly convinced that you're ready. You know, recovery from a midlife trauma, is a lot like that massive climbing wall in Army basic training. And I don't know how many of you were in the Army and went through basic training, or the Navy, or Marines obviously have a few of their own basic training courses. But there, you've probably seen this on television if you didn't experience it yourself. There's this huge training wall, probably about 50 feet high, and the recruits have to climb over the thing. They look dangerous as heck, and it's especially difficult for the kind of heavy guy there or gal that isn't in very good shape. And the old sergeant is standing there, you're like, "Come on, you lard ass, get off over that wall." And you obviously recognize it's there, just like the wall. Your trauma or your challenge, and there's no getting around it. The sergeant's not going to let you walk around the obstacle, the climbing wall. You have no choice, therefore, but to confront the wall and to get over it if you want to progress and complete your basic training. And you know that things are unacceptable, they're bad on this side of the wall, the sergeant's yelling at you, and you can't see over the wall, it's too high, but that you're confident that things will be better on the other side. So you climb that wall, whatever it takes. And here's another suggestion from the July 2013 Wall Street Journal article. Target specific areas of recovery to work on each week or each month. Attack little bit and pieces of your recovery one at a time, and as you accomplish each interim objective, you can target a different area to work on next. And you may, as needed, you may need to periodically rewrite and update your recovery goals, but you always want to keep a firm plan in mind. You know, it's kind of like a living, breathing, strategic plan for your personal life going forward, a lot like effective strategic planning in companies and in nonprofit institutions. And you may even wish to keep a journal to record your progress by week and by month. That's totally up to you, though. You know, you'll know you're making progress toward recovery when you start looking forward to each day, you stop attempting to avoid bad things, and you start seeking out good things that can happen. That's when you're really starting to recover and starting to look positively upon your future. And when your target period is up, be it 2 years or whatever you've set for yourself, then you've got to ask yourself in all honesty, am I done? I'm sure you'll know by then whether or not you've fully recovered. You'll ask yourself, am I pleased with where my life is today? Are things for me as good as I had expected when I began recovery 2 years ago or whatever the period may be? Am I fully comfortable in my own skin, ready to move on positively and self-confidently in a favorable direction? And if your answer is yes, I've recovered, then celebrate the new you. Reward yourself with something that you've been promising yourself for a long time following recovery. Maybe a trip to Hawaii, for instance, a whole new set of wardrobes, a new car, whatever you promised yourself. Just do it and reward yourself for the 2 years of extended recovery that you've gone through. And I'd like to close this program and segment of the program on a very inspiring story. And I want to tell you about a lady we'll call Sharon, who's a server at a local restaurant that we frequent. And Sharon is not her real name because I obviously don't want to invade her privacy. But the woman we call Sharon has recovered from challenges far greater than most of us will ever face. You know, we'd seen Sharon many times at the restaurant because we go there quite frequently. We never really knew her. She may have been our server one or two times, but you know, as a lot of people you run into frequently, you don't really know them or anything about their life story. But last Wednesday, for some reason or another, my wife and I got to talking to Sharon, and she is remarkably open about her story. And we were so impressed with her remarkable story and her strength of character. You see, back over 20 years ago in her mid-20s, Sharon was diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor. And it's not apparently where it's located. It's not worth the risk of trying to remove it because it's too close to some vital parts of the brain, and it's non-malignant, fortunately, or obviously she wouldn't probably still be alive after all these years, but it does cause frequent headaches and sometimes confusion and other things and vision changes, she described, and she's now in her 40s, and she's been living with this tumor for 20 years. And then to top it all off, recently she fought breast cancer and beat that through a series of chemo treatments, as if she didn't have enough problems with her tumor. But despite, and this is the real amazing thing, despite her frequent health challenges, she's now in her third year at a local university in her late 40s, and she's got a triple major. Now, I've heard of double majors before, but I've never heard of a triple major. And she's working 30 hours a week at the restaurant to pay for it. And when she graduates in 2015, Sharon plans to open a shelter and counseling center for single women with children who are facing major challenges, challenges like homelessness, physical abuse, no job, whatever it may be. And there, she described there are several facilities in our area for battered married women, but not an effective center for single women that have the same type of problems. And Sharon, and I'm totally convinced that she will achieve what she plans to do because she's that kind of person. You know, last Saturday we saw Sharon again, and she was in a good mood joking about the day she had a wig on, and we were kidding her how different she looked, and we were having a good time, but she wasn't actually our server. She was serving down the line, but suddenly I heard a loud crash, and I looked down, and Sharon was flat on her back with her hands weakly at her side shaking. She'd passed out unexpectedly, suddenly, and crashed to the ground, hitting her head on the cement floor. And we thought, good God, is it her tumor acting up? You know, and perhaps the EMS and an ambulance came out and took her away. I thought maybe she was even had some danger of dying, or certainly maybe the tumor was progressing or whatever. But last Tuesday, 3 days after her fall, we were back at that restaurant eating again, and believe it or not, Sharon was back on the job, and it turns out that her passing out, the doctors think, was due to a new medication she was taking, not the tumor itself. And you know that one little bout of passing out was not going to get Sharon down. And the end of the story this week, she's back moving forward with her life and her career with the same pleasing, positive attitude she had before. And you know, when you and I think about our little disappointments, large or small, and the challenges we have, it's helpful to remember people like Sharon and how much courageous individuals like that have overcome. And you and I can also overcome what's traumas that we've gone through or difficulties we have gone through. Our secret, as I see it, is to concentrate on thanking God and thanking other people for our many blessings today and for their assistance in moving forward tomorrow. And if and when you hit a temporary roadblock to recovery, here's a great idea that works for me. Concentrate for a while on helping others overcome their challenges. You know, when I'm really up against a wall, if I concentrate on somebody else's problems and see if I can come up with creative solutions for them, so often that leads me to then think of creative solutions for myself. And I think it'll work for you also. And I would recommend my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, because it has extensive pages on recovery from challenges and traumas common to middle age and much more. Talk about waking up to life after sleepwalking through life like I did for 30 years. And you can preview my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, at our website, www.middleagerenewal.com, and I urge you to do so. We also offer a free mini middle age renewal training mini course that goes through some of the highlights of my book, and you can get that for absolutely nothing. And next week, we'll conclude our extended series of the six R's of midlife renewal. And as you will recall, recovery is the final R. And then we'll discuss ways to kick off your autumn with a flourish, both in your career or small business and in daily living. And we look forward to seeing you then. And until then, always remember, middle age can be your best age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his middle age renewal training system by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.